Greetings, football fans. This is Rita, your thrice champion in the Option Pick'em Football Challenge with D&Z. Each week, we pick the winners for every NFL regular season matchup and compete to see who comes out on top. It's free to join, and the winner gets the ultimate bragging rights and a chance to record this spot next year. Are you in? Come test your skills against me, D, Z, and the rest of the league. Visit the Fade Route socials, click Join the Option, and sign up today. Good luck, and we'll see you for week one.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG at Fade Route Podcast, or drop us a line on X at FadeRouteDNZ, and you could be next. Part two of our interview with author Ray Hartjen starts right now. If you missed part one, you know what to do. Check out the most recent episode of The Fade Route with D and Z. And we're here with Ray Hartjen, co-author of Immaculate, How the Steelers Saved Pittsburgh. And when you and Tom were researching the book, what was one piece of the story that surprised you the most? You know, considering the fact you're not the Pittsburgher, you're a son of Texas, like you said. So what was something that surprised you, that something that you thought you knew about the Steelers or Pittsburgh, or, you know, that turned out to be completely different, or something that just kind of you never had heard before?
You know, it sounds goofy. First of all, everything was so new. You know, I liken the book to be, you know, the collection of maybe, I don't know, like 80 to 100 campfire stories that kind of woven into, you know, 132,000 words into a book. You know, there's a lot of small little vignettes, and, you know, some of my favorite vignettes are just, you know, finding out what happened to the Immaculate Reception Ball, you know, thinking, oh, this is certainly in Franco Harris's, you know, trophy case. No, up until a couple of years ago, it was in the vault of an insurance agent at Pittsburgh. I think one of the things that stick out in my mind is when I visited Pittsburgh, I don't know, sometime it was, you know, probably in the late 80s, you know, you drive through the tunnel, one of the tunnels, and you get there and it's like, whoa, there's this city. All of a sudden just, you know, pops out of, you know, you're in the darkness, you pop out and there's this city, and you cross the bridge into it. And it was all the bridges. The city with the most bridges in the world is the city of Pittsburgh. And number two on the list is Venice in Italy, which is literally built in a lagoon, you know, and has to have bridges from bridges around. That was just, you know, one of the little tidbits that stick in my head about the city of Pittsburgh. But there's so many, you know, fascinating stories, I think, in the book, from, you know, reading about, you know, the steel, researching the steel magnates, the barons who, you know, created these steel industries, the wealth that they achieved, and then you know, all the interesting characters that played football for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, I love going back and looking at film of Mel Blunt, Hall of Fame cornerback, and he is still the prototypical NFL cornerback 45, 50 years later. Tall, rangy, fast. What made him even unique was he's a strong tackler and came, you know, supported the run game with a bit of an attitude. You know, he was a hard hitter as well. But, you know, looking at a player like him and just, you know, just watching him, you know, I don't know when the audience is listening to this. You know, it could be, you know, a long time from now. But just earlier this week, Aaron Donald signed with the Rams, you know, after being retired for 2 years. And Aaron Donald's one of the best defensive tackles in the history of the game. Mean Joe Green was Aaron Donald 50 years ago, right? You know, you watch those games and you see that number 75 has to be paid attention to with two guys every single play is on the field. And back then, he was on the field every single play of the defense had to play. You know, just this complete game record on the defensive line. You know, digging into those players, understanding that, you know, Mean Joe Green, Joe's not even his name. His great aunt thought he looked like, as a baby, looked, you know, big and strong like Joe Louis, the boxer. So Mean's a nickname and Joe's a nickname as well. But it was, you know, all these things as, you know, researching it, just, You know, it, like I said earlier, it gave me a stronger sense of appreciation for what the Steelers were able to accomplish. And again, you know, as a Cowboys fan, I was not a fan. But it was interesting to go back and do that research.
Yeah, the name Charles isn't as terrifying as Mean Joe Green.
Yeah.
Mean Charles, no.
No.
Mean Charles.
But it's interesting you say, like, you know, the city kind of pops out of nowhere, because I remember I drove to Pittsburgh about 10, 15 years ago, you know, coming from New York. And we were driving through mountains forever. I was like, I, where is this place? Like, why is it taking so long to get here? I thought I was in Pennsylvania. Like, I felt like I was in the car forever. And you're right, the city just pops out of nowhere. Like, oh, okay, it's here. And then the stadium, both the where the Pirates play and where the Steelers play, are right in the same area. Like, they've catered that area to, you know, the sports. But I had a lovely time there, you know, going around town and meeting people. And again, nicest people ever, and it's a really gritty town, but you know, it was a good experience for me.
Yeah, you know, I live in California. Tom and I live in the Bay Area. I live in Southern California now. My wife and I wanted to move closer to our daughter and her husband. But you know, the weather's pretty good in California. But as I was, you know, helping Tom write the book, I was like, man, I could live in Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, winters aren't so great or whatever. But yeah, I liked it. And, you know, Tom and I had opportunities to participate in, like, the, you know, the book festival there, the Arts and Humanities Festival. And I like going back and checking it out. It's a cool little town.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that the art scene there is just, it's huge. It's what you'd like talk about misconceptions. Mm-hmm. Think blue collar, steel, grit. All, they have a booming art scene.
Like, yeah, you know, it benefited from steel money, right? You know, finding, you know, the ballet and the symphony and things like that. Detroit, similar. Seattle with Boeing, you know, being a big supporter of the arts. So, yeah, definitely benefited from having a lot of money coming in. And, you know, somebody, you know, Andrew Carnegie saying, hey, you know, why don't we fund something here? Much like the thousands upon thousands of libraries that have been funded by the Carnegie Foundation.
Absolutely. So if you take all the Super Bowls away, the Immaculate Reception, Franco Harris, all the mythology surrounding the Pittsburgh Steelers, what do you think the Steelers actually gave Pittsburgh that the city needed during the collapse of the steel industry?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it would have given them what they gave them if they hadn't been successful, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Steelers were founded in 1933, and they were not very good for the longest time. The saying used to be SOS, same old Steelers. And then, you know, Chuck Noll came in. I think it was in like 69, 70, his first season, 1-13. It's like, uh-oh, same old Steelers again. 1972, they really turned it around. Came from nowhere. That was the Immaculate Reception game. You know, that was not a year they went on to win the Super Bowl. They ran into a buzzsaw called the Miami Dolphins in the next round of the playoffs. But, you know, they finally had played a home playoff game. They finally had won a playoff game. You know, this is nearly 40 years after their existence. You know, so if they hadn't been good, you know, Tom's thesis is that, you know, maybe the city doesn't, you know, persevere and maybe they give up a little easier than, you know, with the success that they experienced, Super Bowls and, you know, four, you know, very soon after 72, 1974 was the first Super Bowl victory, the four Super Bowls in 6 years, you know, that gave the, you know, the, I don't know, the stick-to-itiveness and the perseverance. You know, maybe even a stubbornness. You know, a lot of people left Pittsburgh during that time. You know, Pittsburgh, the Steelers now have this big fan bases in places like Washington, D.C., Atlanta. You know, people who were let go of their steel industry jobs, they had to go someplace where there were jobs, right? You know, and so, you know, a lot of people left, but those people that stuck around said, look, you know, the Steelers were, you know, pretty crappy for 39 years. They stuck at it. To it, look what they do, and then look at them, you know, individually within these seasons or within these games, and the way that they play, they're like us, they're, you know, a mirror image of us. You know, if we, you know, stick to it and see through it, you know, what doesn't kill us makes it stronger, and any other cliches that you might have. But I think it's an interesting question, Z, if they hadn't been good, you know, would the fate of Pittsburgh have been different? And maybe, at least, you know, that was, you know, Tom's working thesis, is that the the reason that Pittsburgh was able to get through it is that when they needed heroes, they could find their heroes. When Detroit was going through the same thing, when they were looking for their heroes, you know, they were still looking for them. The Lions weren't delivering. The Tigers did a little bit later, but that was, you know, later. And the Pistons, same thing, later. So, like, you know, when the city really needed their heroes, they had bona fide heroes, the team that was getting it done.
It's true. Cause I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the Tigers. Cause I mean, the Pirates don't exactly have the greatest track record either. So, you know, as a Pittsburgh sports fan, like, you know, you definitely, you know, it's some lean times there. Like, you had your Clementis, you had your Willie Stargells, you know, but
Bonds briefly
in the late 80s, early 90s, the sustained excellence of the Penguins with Mario Lemieux, and then later on Sidney Crosby, that came later, right? There's no NBA team to speak of, right? Pittsburgh sports, you know, you could make the argument. I wonder if Tom would agree with that statement. We'd have to have him on and maybe get him to comment on this. We could argue that Steelers dynasty saved sports in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know, the Steelers were very strong throughout the 70s. The Pirates did win the title in October of 79. Mm-hmm. They won the World Series, and, you know, the Steelers won the 1980 Super Bowl, beating the Rams. And then, for a short period of time, Pittsburgh was the city of champions in kind of like the weirdest moment, you know, into 79, 1980, you know, probably the trough, you know, with economic unprosperity in the city, them going around, you know, saying that they're the city of champions, but you're right, you know, the Pirates are, you know, mixed bag of tricks, you know, through the 60s and 70s, you know, 79, early 80s, you know, some good years, and then Mario Lemieux had not arrived at on the scene yet to help carry it through hockey. So yeah, it was a Steelers town, and you know, football was invented in that area, right? You know, Western mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, you know, Southeastern Ohio. There's a strong root for football in throughout all the high school, colleges. You know, Pittsburgh was, you know, with the University of Pittsburgh and Duquesne, you know, back in the 30s, you know, that was the epicenter of college football as well. So there's this strong history of embracing the sport in Western Pennsylvania. And, you know, the Steelers certainly benefited from that.
No, 100%. And, as like you said, it was a perfect storm of events that kind of led them to that moment. And it just kind of continues to be some ebbs and flows. Like even with the current team, now you have, you know, son of Pittsburgh, Mike McCarthy, coming in there to try and right the ship. I mean, if you want to argue that the ship needed to be righted, I mean, Mike Tomlin never under 500, but that's another story for another time. But,
it's amazing talking to Steeler fans and the amount of frustration they had with Mike Tomlin for always being at 500 or above. You know, you look at the Steelers, they're now on their fourth head coach, but up until, you know, this point in time last year, three head coaches in over 50 years. You know, it wasn't that long ago, Jacksonville Jaguars had three coaches in a season, you know? what are you complaining about? You know, it's so hard to find, you know, success, but, you know, they have this, you know, Tomlin had this saying, the standard is the standard. And the standard was winning playoff games, going to Super Bowls, winning championships. And they were, you know, fans are frustrated that Tomlin only had one Super Bowl championship. So, you know, that he wasn't meeting the standard. So we'll see what Mike McCarthy, you know, brings about. But yeah, the unbelievable in my mind, the level of frustrations. You know, I used to be that Cowboys fan. I'm a Seahawks fan now. You know, once I moved west.
Nice and,
you
move.
Once I moved west, you know, I moved, I think like 1989, 1990, pre-internet. You know, and so, you know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with, you know, and so the Seahawks are in the newspaper every day and all that. So I'm like, I'm a Seahawks fan now. I've been living large for the last, since February. Yes.
No, 100%. And, the Jets would kill for that kind of stability. Let's just put it that way.
What are they?
Next coach, you know.
How many coaches have they had? They've had four coaches in the last five seasons, something of that nature. But the Jets would love to have the consistency and the standard that Steelers have. But We'll get you out of here on this one.
Up and making the playoffs every year, that's not bad. And I can understand being the frustration of wanting to win playoffs. But, I mean, I don't know. Pity the Phoenix Cardinals, Arizona Cardinals fan or whatever, you know, who, you know, has to, you know, face their division. And, you know, I don't know. But we'll see what Pittsburgh gets. We'll see.
Yeah, I was recently with a Jet fan, a season ticket holder, and he's like, I've been a season ticket holder for over 25 years, and all I want to see is my team win a playoff home game. Because when they did have success, they won those games on the road. They didn't win them in New York. So he's never seen his team win a playoff home game. He's like, oh, man, that's tough. And he's like, oh, what do you think this year? I was like, no, I don't think it's going to happen this year, man.
No. I mean, they do have the Steelers have a strong team, and that division is tough, you know, with the Bengals and with the Ravens, the black and blue division. And you know what? 3 out of 4 head coaches turnover. They have as good a chance as anybody this year, with the exception of the Browns, of course. But, you know, they have a shot, and they still have elements of that black and blue, that blue collar, but you know, they're relying on Aaron Rodgers. So yeah, we're going to see what happens there.
Yeah. And you know, they've kind of, you know, they've lost a little bit of that identity. They, you know, the older fan, you know, wants to have, you know, good, strong, solid defense, right? You know, the defense, they got TJ Watt and, you know, he's a absolute superstar. They also have, you know, favorites, big fan favorites of it, but yeah, they would love to see a tougher defense. And, you know, for a while there, they got a little frustrated, even with having a successful quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger. You know, at the end of Roethlisberger's career, you know, throwing all these bubble screens and things like that, you know, kind of getting away from, Pittsburgh Steeler football, which is, you know, built on, you know, running the football and all that. So, yeah, we'll see what they get with an older quarterback like Rodgers. You know, last year wasn't that great, but, they got lucky to win the division. A missed 40-some-odd-yard field goal at the last play of the game gave them the division title. And then, you know, the Houston Texans exposed them for, you know, being one of the weaker teams in the playoff.
Very true. You know, that kick seemed to have screwed Tyler Loop up. I mean, he's, that's definitely – he's been missing kicks left and right in training camp.
He did make the team, so, I mean, he's all right for now.
Yeah, but he missed 3 kicks.
I know. I wouldn't trust him.
That's a tough position, man. They don't even get paid that much relative to, you know, some of the other folks, a lot of the other stars on the team. But, you know, you sit on the bench or stand around the bench for most of the game. Then you get thrown in there, particularly late in the year when it's cold outside. And it's like, here, you know, make this. And nowadays, like a 50-yard field goal, that's nothing. That's like an extra point. You know, one of the things that really amazed me about, you know, watching these old Steeler games, you know, researching the book, their field goal kicker, Roy Girella. No way he plays in the NFL today. You know, a guy that, you know, was like 500, you know, in the 40s, right? You know, and, you know, didn't have a particularly long leg. You know, this, you know, it making, you know, a little over half of the field goal attempts, that doesn't get you out of the preseason. Yet he's a pro bowler back in that time. You know, a whole different type of game. And that's just like one of the things, that you looked at it, passing. You look at your quarterback play, you know, back in the 70s, if you're a 50% passer, you're doing all right. You're right. You know, there are a lot of quarterbacks, good quarterbacks that would go through an entire year around 48%, 49%. You know, and if you're not at 62% now, you might not be on a roster, right? You know, you have to be able to, you know, hit around that 64, 65, 66% of your passes. So it's, you know, the game has changed.
A lot of different games. Really, it was a running game mostly, right? And then punting was not frowned upon. You want to, you know, punt into the corners and back them down. Going for it on fourth down was like unheard of. You know, yeah. It was a lot different back then.
Yeah,
you mean you weren't talking about probability? We weren't talking about that.
You know, one of the Tomlinisms I liked in researching the book is, you know, a handful of years ago he was somebody in the media asked him about his new toy in training camp. It was what was his name? Mendenhall, I think, was a
Rashad Mendenhall.
Yeah, Rashad Mendenhall, running back out of Illinois, right? And I think he was like think it's like a second round draft pick. And, you know, they're like, hey, you know, what about this new toy you have at camp? And, you know, Tomlin's like, well, hold on a second. You know, first thing he has to do is learn how to protect the quarterback. Second thing he needs to learn how to do is learn how to protect the football. And then we'll see, you know, what we can do with the running and passing game with them. And I thought that was, you know, such a poignant statement that here you're looking at a running back. And the third most important thing for that running back is to run the football, you know, completely different in the 70s, where it's like, you know, you're feeding a workhorse running back a ball 20, 25 times a game. And their sole job is to run the football, right?
You know, first downs,
they weren't protecting
4 yards every time you get the ball.
Yeah, they weren't protecting the quarterback and things like that. Number one was being a running back. And so, you know, seeing how that position has changed, for a lot of teams. You know, we had that reemergence of the running back a couple of years ago, Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry having these monster years. But, you know, now it's, you know, not uncommon for running back by committee, you know, a first and second down running back, and then having a third down running back come in for the game. But then, you know, understanding that, you know, you got to protect your quarterback. Steve Young might still be playing if Lawrence Phillips learned how to pick up a blitz, right? Interesting how the game has changed, fellas.
Big time. Even Terry 100%. Bradshaw said, I used to call him on plays. We'd come to the line and we'd talk about it, what we thought was going to be the best thing. And tell him, oh, you run about 15 yards up and come in, and I'll throw you the ball. I'll be ready for you. Like, oh, okay. Like, that was literally like the play calls. There wasn't so much of colors and schemes and, you know, third down packages and first down packages. It was, you know, he was pretty much calling it out as he got there.
And one of the things they also did was they ran a play until defense could prove that you could make a stop. And, you know, and even, you know, offensive coordinators like Norv Turner, I mean, he did that with Emmitt Smith in the, you know, the glory days of the Cowboys. It's like, if you can stop this off tackle run with Emmitt Smith, then we'll start calling different plays. You know, back then in the 70s, when you have Bradshaw and other quarterbacks calling their play, it's like, this keeps working, keep doing it. And that's one of the frustrations I have as a fan. You know, we'll watch our favorite team and it's like, oh, you know, there's three runs. They just gained 14 yards total, first down. And then, you know, they throw it. There's a penalty on that play. It's, you know, holding call. Now it's first and 20, you know, and you're like, you were running the football. You were doing it, but you had to get all fancy. And
weren't a big fan of that call at the goal line in the Super Bowl all those years ago with Russell Wilson.
2015 Super Bowl, I think it was, or maybe the 2016 Super Bowl.
They're killing him with Marshawn Lynch the whole game. It's like, oh man, they're not going to expect this. Quick
one thing that does frustrate me as a Seahawks fan, though, is you know, a lot of the defenders, you know, they've kind of made up with Pete Carroll over the last couple of years, you know, but you know, they're like, run the ball. You know, I remember Richard Sherman was so vocal about it for so many years. And I just want to keep, you know, reminding him, like, hey, Sherm, you know, Legion of Boom gave up a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. You know, maybe a couple of stops would have gone a long way to winning the Super Bowl too. So just
How about Tom Brady was 7-for-8 on that final drive to get to put them ahead 28-24? How about that?
Yeah, so you know, it's not, you know, it's a team game, but I understand the frustration. I certainly couldn't believe it. Sitting on my couch watching, going, "What was that? You got Marshawn Lynch in the backfield and
Malcolm Butler
made his career."
That's right.
Made Malcolm Butler's career. That's for sure. But even Tom Brady couldn't believe it. Like, his reaction, we won! Oh my God, we won!
And didn't Tom give him his the pickup truck he won as being MVP for the Super Bowl? Yeah. He's like, that's yours, Malcolm. And, and Malcolm Butler was a rookie, wasn't he?
I think so. Either a rookie or a first year or a second year player. I mean, he was pretty brown. I mean, he was pretty, you know, green. I mean, if he was paying attention in practice when they were doing the goal line that week.
Yeah, great play. And then, you know, so, you know, ironic, you know, remember what, 6 years later or whatever, he doesn't play in the Super Bowl. He suits up.
That's right.
It was like the surprise non-starter. It's like, well, you know, what's wrong with him? And, you know, cameras are showing him on the sidelines. He doesn't even have a helmet in his hand. You're like, oh, what happened?
Everything
there
to this guy, and he doesn't even get to sniff the field. I think he lost that Super Bowl, right?
That was the Eagles one.
That was the Eagles one, right?
That was the Eagles one. Yeah. Probably could have used him, just like they could have used Marshawn Lynch at the goal line. But I mean, you were talking about the evolution of the run game. like even a guy like Jerome Bettis, like that wasn't so long ago, but he feels like an anachronism. Like he feels like it feels like a different era.
But yeah. And, you know, it's one thing that I think kind of interesting is, you know, when I'm watching this game film is, you know, Franco Harris was a I'm really kind of hesitant to say this because his widow, Dana, is now a friend of Tom's. But Franco was a bit of a fumbler. You know, Franco would have, you know, 6-7 fumbles a year. You know, there's a couple of games that he had multiple fumbles in a game, you know, and that doesn't happen these days. You know, you have guys that go, other than the quarterback position, you know, you have guys that go, you know, years without fumbling the football. You know, player like Kareem Hunt, you know, fumbled like his first carry in the NFL, but I don't know if he fumbled for another decade after that. So, you know, the way that, you know, people have, you know, I think Lawrence Taylor was the first, you know, offensive defensive player, you know, like strip the ball every chance you get. Now everybody does that. You know, every pile, people are, you know, punching at footballs and pulling at footballs. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you can't hold onto a football, you can't play in the NFL.
No, people are starting to complain. You know, D's a Ravens fan. Like he knows about the Derrick Henry fumbles last year. Like he starts to develop a little bit of a fumbling problem, mm-hmm. you know, late in life. But it's one of those things like, even Tiki Barber with the Giants, fumbling problem. Tom Coughlin changed how he held the ball and how he, you know, held it to his body high and tight. No one ever told him to hold the ball high and tight before. I don't know about that, but it changed. It extended a little bit, but not enough. But you know, it definitely altered his career. But we'll get you out here on this one, Ray. You and Tom Olenek ultimately spent about 18 months writing this book. But if you could go back and sit down with one person from those 70 Steelers teams and ask them one question that you couldn't answer through your research, who would it be and what would that question be?
That's an interesting question. It's a great question. I can tell you the person that we would want to speak with is Franco Harris. We did not speak with Franco. One of our prized possessions is a picture of him holding the book. He had an advanced copy of the book. I'm not exactly sure how he got it, but we've heard from his widow Dana that he liked the book and he thought it was cool. Tom and I were at a book signing event in Pittsburgh, and this fan comes up to us. His name is Corey. I'm Facebook friends with him now. Corey comes up with a copy of the book, and he wants us to sign it. Tom flips it open. Right there at the front of the page is Franco Harris's signature.
Wow. So,
Tom had placed the book before it became available. He had placed advanced copies in the like pro shop at whatever the stadium is called. It used to be called Acrisure Stadium. It might be something different now. So they have the little pro shop there. Corey was there, got the book. Franco just happened to be around and said, "Hey, will you sign my book?" You know, and that's a one of one because our book's publication date was the day that Franco Harris passed away. He was such an important player for the Steelers. He's such an important citizen for the city of Pittsburgh. You know, all of his community work and the like. He was just the guy that personified the Steelers and personified the city. And you know, Tom and I figured that we'd have, you know, all these opportunities to chat him up, you know, and we never had the pleasure of meeting him. So, I'm not exactly sure what the question is, Z, that, you know, I'm asking Franco Harris, but we would totally be wanting to hang out with him. You know, we were the book published the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception Game. I don't know if you guys recall that day just a few years ago. Oakland Raiders were in town. It was a night game. I believe it might have been a Sunday night game. But the whole weekend was built around the Immaculate Reception game. Yes. They were retiring Franco Harris's number, and Tom was in town and was attending the game and was going to a dinner the night before and was going to be seated at a table with Franco.
Nice.
Franco, ended up just passing away peacefully on his couch, one night. And so, yeah, Z, to answer your question, Franco's our guy that we hang out with. I'm not sure what that question is, but we'd have so many for him. Just wanted to chat him up.
100%. And I know that he would definitely, I mean, if he loved the project, I'm sure you probably been able to talk his ear off. But Ray Harchin, co-author of Immaculate, How the Steelers Saved Pittsburgh. Thank you for coming on, brother. And I know you're a musician as well. Plug away. What do we have going? You've also have some novels too, besides this book. So please, by all means.
Cancer survivor too, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity to plug. I'm a writer, musician. I have 6 published books. I am a cancer patient as well. My second book, right after Immaculate, How the Steelers Saved Pittsburgh, was a cancer memoir called Me, Myself, and My Multiple Myeloma. We are recording this episode on September 1st, which is day number 1 of Blood Cancer Awareness Month. So if I can ask all you audience members, go see your doctor and ensure that you get a blood test taken. When I was diagnosed 7 years ago now, my journey to diagnosis started with a slightly anemic score on a blood value. And on a complete blood count, which is a routine blood test, routine blood screening. So just this minor anemic thing, we went to investigate, you know, can we confirm it? Yes. Can we confirm the confirmation? Yes. More sophisticated test, a very painful bone marrow biopsy showed that 90% of my bone marrow was cancerous. And jeez. I felt fine. I felt good, right? So that's why I want to say to everybody out there, go see your doctor, get a blood test. Because the early detection of anything is the best detection of anything. You owe it to yourself. Sure, it's inconvenient to go to the doctor. Nobody likes needles, but come on, you know, cowboy up, you can do it. Once a year, get a blood test. So thanks for sharing that. My last 2 books, my most recent 2 books have been my first foray into fiction. They're novels. I wanted to see if, to challenge myself, to see if I could write a book that I typically read. You know, kind of like a spy thing, you know, and all that. So I created some characters. One novel is called Outflanked, and the second one in the series is called The Iranian Fiasco. Books number 7, number 8, coming out later this year, and pretty stoked for it. So thanks for the opportunity. And I want to thank you, too, for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate it. Man, you guys are football know-it-alls, so I want predictions from you. The NFL season kicks off here in 8 days, I think it is. Well, who's winning the Super Bowl?
It's kind of hard to bet against the Rams right now, to be perfectly honest. I mean, between Aaron Donald, Miles Garrett, if not now, when for that team? Matthew Stafford has no excuses. None.
I thought they were the best team last year. They came super close, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Damian? What do you got?
I am going with what Z was saying, but I have it for another team, and that's the Bengals. If not now, when? Joe Burrow, hopefully we'll get through this season healthy, should be an MVP, comeback player of the year candidate. And if it doesn't happen this year, it's never going to happen, so it's got to happen this year.
Yeah, those are good ones. I think the Rams, I mean, they didn't get any worse than they got last year. And I thought they were the best team last year. But I am, when you think about this, if not now, when, you know, I think a lot of teams maybe might be in there. You know, Detroit, can they get back in the playoffs? And a couple of years ago, that was a if not now, when. I'm so stoked, man. I'm looking forward to the season started. A friend of mine, Rob Manfredo, I'll give him a little shout out, a diehard Giants fan in New York. He likens training camp to an Advent calendar for football fans.
Oh, interesting.
Every day, it's a little treat in there. And I think he's right. When training camp opens, it's like, great. Now we've gotten through the difficulty of preseason football.
Oh. It's kind of preseason this year.
Yeah, kind of hard to watch, right? But now I'm stoked. I'm so excited and ready to go. So
8 days away.
That's right.
Day this year.
Yeah. Australia, you're getting our best, 100%. But we are previewing the NFC East this week, but that's going to have to wait for our order up show. If you want to be the newest member of the InRoute, hit us up. FadeRoutMail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at FadeRout Podcast. Drop us a line on X at FadeRoutDNZ. And you could join us on the In Route. Ray Hartchin, thank you for coming on, brother. Let us talk again soon. Let's talk Steelers. Let's talk Cowboys. Let's just chop it up. Talk football.
I love talking football, fellas. So keep up your great work on the Fade Route, man. Love the show. And thanks again for the opportunity. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.